Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. من الشيطان الرجيم. Allah's name, most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer. All praise is due to Allah. I want to greet you in greetings of peace, the greetings of assalamu alaikum. And I want to welcome you to today's program, Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. My name is Imam Shahid Abdullah. I am an African-American Bilali and Griot. I tell the stories and write books and relevant to the development of the African-American culture, how we first began in America, and also about our ancestry beyond America, but mostly here in America, and we deal with the issues, evolution of our culture. Although there are many other issues that we deal with as we go along, but the main focus is on our culture and the development of our culture. And there are several reasons we do that. And one of the main reasons, because it's the primary idea of preservation and prosperity of people, and especially the African American people. You must consider ourselves and consider how we came into existence and what and how we can be a culture that continues to thrive and continues to move on. We hear much talk in today's world about the different problems that are going on in other parts of the world with fighting is prevailing over peace. And it seems when peace is asked for, fighting is about 400-600 years ago, that caused a very, very important situation in the world and a very important situation for people of African descent, especially those here in America. We have undergone different changes and listened to different scholars and different people who brought about this idea of how, what happened to the African-American people and what did not happen to them and what is the value of knowing these issues. When you hear, I had a slight bout with a cold, and I'm trying to get past it now and work my way through this morning, this afternoon. But I did want to bring this information to you because for 2 weeks we had a couple problems with the networking, and we didn't get a chance to deal with an issue that we wanted to bring to you, dealing with our latest book called Uncovering the Scheme, Preventing the Evolution of the African American People or African American Culture. That section we was trying to close out and was dealing with a lurking. The name of the first chapter, Lurking, it embarks on the idea of culture. And the reason that's so important because most of us think we have a pretty good idea of culture, and some of us do, but the majority of the people in America, not just African Americans, but people in general, they don't have a real idea in terms of definition of a culture, its impact, and how necessary it is for the survival of a people. They don't take that into consideration, and main reason the European American doesn't take that into consideration too much because they're taught culture every day. They're taught their culture daily. When they get up in the morning, the news is about them. When they go to school, the school is about them. The education system is about them. Everything is about them, so they don't really have to be taught culture as a essential focus on they should be concentrating on in order to grow and develop. So they can concentrate on how to become wealthy, how to become intelligent, how to become leaders in the society. They can concentrate on some of those aspects and not be so concerned with the values and the mores and the different things that come along with culture, because they're taught those naturally. They're taught those as and it's the same way with other people who were part of the development of in America. They carried their cultures with them. And when people come into America from foreign lands, from Germany or from Africa, any part of Africa, or Saudi Arabia, wherever they come to America from, they bring their culture with them, because culture is so essential to the development of people. It's so essential to the development of their direction in life is so essential to their purpose in life. Most times we hear people talk about purpose, and they talk about it in generational terms. They talk about it from one generation to the next. They speak of how their generation came into existence, and they are furthering what their generation before them taught them and gave them. And so all they have to do is lay the foundation on which they were given, and that will tend to propel them into the future so that the next generation will be able to advance itself. The African-American people were doing the same. Just like the Chinese-American, when they come into America, they set up Chinatown. All over the country, you find San Francisco, you find New York, in the South, you find these different cultures. When they come in, they set up these places by which their culture can advance and grow, because this is a tree in a area where it's fertile, and it gets enough sunlight, and it gets enough water, it gets enough of the things necessary for its growth. That's the way a culture is for a people, for a human to grow in the context of self-identity, a positive identity. They need the culture to fertilize that. They need the culture to build that particular aspect in order for each human being to grow. So when people come to America, you see the Chinese people, they have a culture they bring with them, the Spanish Spanish depending upon what country they're from, not just people who speak Spanish. That's a different issue. That becomes more of a political issue. When you hear a person speaking, say, I'm Spanish. When he's saying he's Spanish, generally speaking, they're talking from a political position, especially when it involves socializing and developing with the African-American people. Because if they say that they are Colombian, for example, which some of them are, they are Puerto Rican, which some of them are, you say they're Mexican, which some of them are, but when it comes time to count up the electives, count up the reasons for causing the government to lean one side or the other, they say we're Spanish. They all claim that language, Spanish, and they claim Spaniards, Latinos, those terms are very political, and they use them in respect to getting an advantage in a political situation where votes count, where the people who make the decisions as to what is going to be done in one neighborhood for one group of people as opposed to another, those votes count. That's why they change that kind of a situation. So we hear people using those terms like Latino and Spanish, know that they're playing a political game with the average African American, because we don't realize that. When we say we're African American, even if some of us say we're black, when you say you're African American or black, you're putting yourself in a different category. You're saying them in a different category than that person who said Spanish, because that Spanish category is bigger than the African American category. So that Spanish category would give them more opportunities in terms of voting and developing. But that's a ploy they use, because there's no such people as Spanish. There's no such people as Spanish. They're either Colombian or they're Puerto Rican or they're Spaniards from Spain or they're Portuguese. The place of origin tells the people who they are. See, they have the African-American at a disadvantage because the African-American think all of it means the same, but it doesn't mean the same. They are playing, again, a political game on the average African-American people. The language that the African-American people speak most is English. If you say a group of people are Spanish, then you have to say this group of people, the language they speak is English. So if you compare one of the linguistic groups, you have to compare the other one of the linguistic groups. And certainly, the African-Americans outnumber any other linguistic group in America dealing with ethnicity or nationality or place of origin. You would have African Americans who said we're Spanish. We have African Americans who said we're English. Nullify the use of that kind of, we won't use the term cunningness, but it is a form of cunningness that they use when they're talking about these political situations. We just have to become knowledgeable of what's going on in America, and that would give us the place on to determine what is going on in the world. They talk with us and talk to us in a way that we don't have that what we are trying to bring with this program, the concept of mental freedom. We know that the African-American people and most of the people in America who have been indoctrinated into their school system think in a certain pattern, think in a certain way that promotes European culture and negates any other culture. Sometimes outright negates, but it makes it less than, in most cases, than the European culture. The school system that arrived, that the African American people arrived, was a school system that was designed hundreds of years, even before the European had gotten their school system together. And it was derived in Europe, and it was designed to educate the masses to become workers in factories, to educate the masses to become workers in factories, not educating the masses to become scholars and leaders and people of that sort. It's mostly for that rural working kind of person, even carpenters and people who build houses, contractors. The school system is set up to develop that kind of individual, that kind of group. And when you develop a people like that, then the people don't have the opportunity to have individuals within their group, within their category, to develop at a high rate of scientists, like doctors and lawyers and scholars and producers. We are far behind as African Americans in that area, but that wasn't always true. But it is true today, and it's true today primarily because of what started to happen in the 1960s. We up until 1954, the African American people were making a great advancements in America, and we were doing very well. This is why when we look at that concept of culture, we see that we had developed a culture very early on in America. We had developed a language, which is known as the Geechee language, which is the culmination of English, the English that was spoken by the people from Northern England, who were a lower class of English people. They didn't speak the King's English. They spoke broken dialects and things of that nature. And even the Irish people lived in colonial areas where the African-American people were evolving. So the African-American people adopted that language as a cover language because they were not allowed to speak their own language when they were brought here from Africa. They weren't allowed to keep religion. They weren't allowed to do those things which would cement a culture, would make a culture strong enough to develop people generation after generation and having a positive connection with this positive identification of culture. And because the Africans didn't have the opportunity to maintain their languages, they began to create a language using the English language as a cover. They began to create a language out of the African dialects, different African tribes, their words end with one another, and they put together a volume of words which gave this impact to the language. They put together the language in such a way that the European couldn't quite understand it because he didn't understand the words that the Africans were using. They mixed in Arabic because many of them spoke and wrote Arabic who came from the colonial time, and they say that the number is about 15 to 20% of all the Africans who came to America were of Muslim origin in terms of their religious origin, and they could speak, and many of them could read the Arabic language. But they mixed that in with the languages they were putting together, and that language then became a language to itself, and is looked at now as a language, is not a collection of what they would call pidgin language and all those type of variation they give it. And, but this is in the library of USA. In fact, it's taught in Harvard University and their African-American study courses. This is one of the aspects that was laying the foundation for the African-Americans to develop and start their culture in America. And that aspect was not so much looked on by the Arab community as a viable aspect of culture, because they thought the African was still trying to speak English. They thought the African was still speaking what they call bad English or poor English. But the African had already evolved. He already had evolved out of that thinking, and they had already created a language by which they could understand, but the European American could not understand. And he pointed out from time to time, much the same way that the Jewish people created their language called Yiddish. And when they were in Germany, when they were in Germany, they combined the languages such as Hebrew that they got from the Torah, because the Hebrew was not a spoken language in common sense, but they used the Hebrew language, and they used the German languages, and they put it together with the Aramaic, and they came up with Yiddish. And the Yiddish was created by the Jewish people who were called Ashkenazis. The Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, from the western part of Europe, and mostly in Germany and Poland and places of that nature. And in fact, they make up the great majority of the Hebrews, or the greater majority of the Jewish people in the world. The Ashkenazis and one other group, the Khazar, is the second group, which is another large group of Jewish people. But the language is what's keeps them together. The language must be a cohesive aspect to a people. And the African did the same thing in colonial times with the language we now call Geechee. And once we begin to recognize the importance of this language and the importance of our ability to be able to look at our history as one that came into existence pretty much the same as other cultures came into existence. Certainly we had a little more trial and tribulation in dealing with the aspects of slavery, but at the same time we were developing this language and developing this culture, which was beginning to cement the African in America as a viable culture that was growing, that was going to grow at such a rate that it would actually be threat. It's not a threat, a challenge to all other cultures, and in terms of their growth. The growth of the African American in America was so rapid that by the time they did a survey on the African American community, and it wasn't the European American who was interested in doing a survey, it was African Americans who was interested in doing a survey. From 1896, when the courts deemed that segregation was constitutional, at that point, when this report was done, and it was done, they called the Negro the Negro Market. That was the name of the document, the name of the information that was done. The Negro Market. The Negro Market was put together by a company called Zeth Company out of Chicago and also in New York. It was put together to show that the African-American people had developed themselves into a viable market. Now, this the idea of doing this particular book or this particular report came from African Americans, came from African Americans who already were in the business of doing advanced studies and advanced development in the commercial area and the market area and the financial area to develop the African American community. They had already started that. They had already been developing that. And what they did, they wanted to take advantage of the situation that happened during the Depression in the year 1929 to 1930, 32, 33, 34, those years. African Americans who were making a great deal of progress during that time wanted to get into the financing and development of the European market, manufacturers and producers who could bring their products to the African-American community, and at the same time, be advertising. They would be advertising in the newspapers and in the African-American newspapers of the time. And it was a very lucrative position to be in, and it was a positive idea for the African-American community to develop this particular report. This report called Negro Market. And they found out many things, but one of the main main points in this particular research, they said that the African-American community was growing and developing self-sufficient, becoming self-sufficient as any nation would have done in that position. You see, that's a very powerful position to be in. And as a good reason, the good reason they took this off the market. They stopped manufacturing this report, the Negro Market. They just got some of them to their community, the European American, to show that the African American people were a viable market, that they could make money and become financially, be a financial sound idea to do business with the African American people of that time. But what else evolved from that report? The European Americans began to realize that the African American people were growing at such a fantastic rate, talking in terms of financially, educationally, all of the different aspects that cause a society to grow and develop. African Americans were developing in that direction on their own. That's very important. Let me just say that again. We were developing at a higher rate than any other group on our own, because that was the time of what they call legal segregation. But it wasn't a problem with us, because it gave us the opportunity to set up stores and banks, over 134 banks we set up in that time. We was developing rail transportation. We already had developed the automobile on a Patterson. He made his first automobile in 1915. Along with Henry Ford. When Henry Ford sold his first motor vehicle in 1915, Patterson had his in 1915. So African Americans were developing at the same rate, but we were more together. We probably were more together than even the European community was together with each other. They did business with each other simply because they know it was a good business idea, and they came as Europeans to America to grow and develop. So they did business with each other. But the African Americans were in a peculiar kind of position. We were in a position where we couldn't go certain places and do certain things, so we were forced to deal with each other. And by being forced to deal with each other means that we had to build our own hotels. We had to establish our own grocery chain across from New York all the way to California. We established the stores, and everything that we were doing during that particular time was as a result of segregation. it promoted the growth and development of the African American self-sufficient, becoming more self-sufficient in a way that we actually became a, used the word threat, but the better word I would say, a word that most people would handle, competition. We became competition. But European understood the importance of control of the masses. Those who understood that clearly knew that that was a threat. It was a threat because the African Americans now were developing on their own independent thought. What we talk about here, we talk about mental freedom. We were developing that process because of segregation. We were developing mental freedom. Although segregation wasn't designed to do that, segregation was designed to keep African American people out of the mainstream of growth, and which they thought would retard us. But it had the opposite effect. What it did, it caused us to grow faster, more powerful, and better. In school systems, where they gave African-American people a lot less money to build than they were developing in the European-American area. Each dollar, they took 75 cents. They would give the African-American people 25% to build their school system. Even with that, the African-American were educating the African-American students at such a rate they were becoming scholars under the nose of European-American. The European-American didn't see this happening the way it was happening. They thought that they would hold back the growth and development of the African-American people by cutting us short in education and giving us only a certain amount of education and then giving us materials to work from, which was secondhand and third hand. But what they missed the interest and desire that the African-American parents and the African-American teachers had for the not only preservation, but for the promotion and development of African-American learning. All African-American teachers, and the records show this, that African-American teachers were best to work with, would teach the children and students better. If you have the opportunity to speak to some people who've gone through some of those segregated school systems, I know not the ones they have set up today. That's just a scheme, part of the scheme. But I'm talking about if you did, they would be your senior. Maybe they'd be 70 years old, 80 years old in that area. Or you may know, you heard that their parents talk about it, which were their grandparents. Or you could take the opportunity and do some research. And do your research and look it up. They have it down. They're not publicizing it like they publicize African Americans being beat and doing slavery. They like to talk about that kind of thing. They like to talk about the African American being taken advantage of by the European American during colonial times, and how they used to rape our slaves, rape the slaves and the men and women. How they used to treat the slaves. They like to tell those stories because those stories are not motivational stories. Those kind of stories put in a person's mind that if they don't develop a certain amount of resentment, what they do develop is a certain amount of negative identity with the concept of their people who came or who were in this country before. They develop a negative thinking, and that negative thinking causes a negative self-image. And the European American is well aware of this. This is what we're getting at. It comes from their books, their research that they don't give us. We have to seek it out. And then many other times that Allah just bless us with the, like the Negro market, for example. The Negro market, we were just blessed with the Negro market. It came as a process into my hands, through a process of my brother being antique dealing. And when he passed, his wife kept up the same process, and then came into this the Negro market. And we then informed the rest of the African-American people about this material. It's so important for us to begin to look at what is the aspect that will cause us to survive and become prosperous at the same time. And the only thing that does that, when you research all the cultures of the earth, all the cultures of the world, research them, how they came into existence, you find that those societies and countries and nations built a culture. And that culture became a way of propagating their ideas and concepts and their people into the future. We have to use the same process. The European knows that we have to use the same process, and our foreparents knew that. That's what they were building. This is why the European American instituted, paid money for, and misdirected other African American community organizations to participate in social integration. Social integration was a form to break down and halt, break down the African American people culture and halt its progress. And since that time, we could look at the statistics, and the statistics will show that we have a much lower graduation rate in high schools. We have a less scholars now, doctors and lawyers and scientists. We have much less than we was having during segregation in terms of producers from our own people. We have fallen behind. Not so much because we don't have the ability to keep up. We have fallen behind because we bit the apple. We bit the poison apple, forbidden fruit. The forbidden fruit was that anytime a people give up their culture, they cannot make progress in the future. Because the future depends on the culture and its continuation of producing people that think, act, and them. Fortunately, for the African American, we do have the power that our foreparents had when they was in segregation, and they used what they were working with to teach and produce our students at that time to become scholars and become great writers and so forth and so on. We have that power still. And fortunately, we have been blessed to be able to take advantage of the people who came before us, who saw what was going on in America and wanted to do something about it. They were interested in the advancement of the African American, not in a way that we had to become European American to call that advancing. Most of us think advancing means to look like a European. Most of us think that advancing means to go to their hotels and go to their restaurants. Whereas all other civilizations, the advancement means to them, they build their own restaurants, their own hotels and things of that nature. Do you know the second largest hotel chain and most of the world is owned by the Indian nation from India? The Sheraton, they just bought it all up because it's very important. These are things that the European American had designed a plan to keep the African American from achieving, because they saw the threat that came of segregation. Now, I know the African-American today don't look at segregation as a positive way that we develop because we were taught differently. And I know that to be a fact because I myself came through an area that we used to teach that the African-American during the 1920s and 1919 and 1930s were not making progress. We were taught that the average African-American was homeless, on the streets, didn't have an education. We were taught that. Only because we didn't read what was really happening when we were taught that. The reality is quite the opposite was taking place. Our people were making advancing very fast. Now, if you compare the work of the African-American people in the 1930s with the work of today, you will find that we were making much more progress. Now, what does that mean in terms of where we're headed? Now, we have this evening, we're going to have a very important guest coming on this evening. I want to give them the time to really talk about some fascinating ideas, concept that he has for us. And I do also want you to be able to ask questions and make comments about anything that you hear about the program. And please, when you do ask your question, keep them sort of relevant to the information that you hear and the information we've given. And be mindful of the time because we try to produce what we're doing with our show here. And at the same time, we want to make sure that our guests have the time to give you their very important and powerful information. We want to let you know you have that opportunity, give you the impression that you do have the opportunity to speak. But we need to take a quick break here, and then we're going to get to our guests, and we're going to conclude the remarks that we are dealing with, and we want to talk about that situation. We're going to just do a short promotion here.
Mark your calendars for the 2023 Muslim Journals, A Time to Be Grateful, coming to Newark, New Jersey, December 7th through the 10th. A Time to Be Grateful is MJ's annual fundraiser to raise awareness about the publication and increase subscriptions, advertisements, and distributors. ATTBG features a weekend of events that promote gratitude, human excellence, cultural expression, and spiritual development, including Culture Night, which showcases Muslim singers, musicians, and spoken word artists, a modest yet ultra-stylish family fashion show luncheon, an awards banquet, business breakfast, marketplace with Muslim vendors, and more. Don't wait. Get your tickets today. Visit www.masjidalhaq.com or call 862-250-5451. Hope to see you there.
Thank you very much. A few minutes here to before we bring our guest on, if you have any questions about what was said so far, and we're going to close that out and bring our guest on, just push the one on your phone and we would bring you into the queue. Okay, we see quite a number of people here. I don't see anyone in the phone to come in. So we're going to sum up what we're talking about and then bring on our guest. He's waiting to bring you some dynamic information, and you're going to be really glad to hear what he has to say. Relevant what we talked about, there is much yet to be done. much to be done, and we all are part of this development that's taking place in the world, and most here in America with the African-American people. And we want to remind our listeners that preservation prosperity go hand in hand. If people cannot preserve themselves, they are not going to be prosperous. That's just the way the creation is, the way Allah has created things. And if we don't have the means on which to preserve ourselves, a subject that we talk about often here, and we're going to talk about it continuously, we'll still mention it this evening before we go off, that we have to be cognizant of the self-replacement fertility rate in the world, and especially in the African-American community. We're far behind in that area, and there's a possibility that we can become extinct like many others have become extinct in our past. We won't be the first people who become extinct, but we don't have to become extinct if we just follow the directions that are given about a culture, how cultures call for people to survive. So I want to introduce our guest tonight, his brother Malik H. Majid. He's an author. He's a brother who came up in Newark, New Jersey, and he's been working at a correction institution, and he's been doing some research and studying, and he came to a subject that caught his attention, and I want him to bring this to you because it's such a, he has a book out called Rock the Mic, Method of Native American Obliteration. And I want him to come on and talk about that and tell us what that means and why he thinks that's important to us. So with that, Brother Malik, your mic is open. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, your mic is open. Would you come on and introduce yourself and tell our listeners about this book you have? It seems very interesting, and has a great deal of information in it, and I think all of our listeners would be glad to hear about it. So, Brother Malik Majid, please come on and tell us about yourself.
Assalamu alaikum. I'd like to thank you, Iman, for inviting me onto your show. The book came about, actually, I had no intentions of writing a book. I was just doing research on my family ancestry, to see how far I could go back. Mm-hmm. And I end up going on one line. I end up going all the way back to 1642, mm-hmm. In Virginia, and before, right when it was changing, and it changed several names in the area. First, it was the Kecoughtan, Powhatan area, and then it went from that area, and it interchanged to Allen of Wright. Then from Allen of Wright, it went to Southampton, and I found it real, you know, just interesting that I was able, just on in the records, to go back that far. So as I just put that aside, and I went and just, you know, just doing family research, and another area I was able to go, another line I was able to go back to 1794. Which was a very interesting year. If anybody know anything about American history, the post American Revolution. And it was two or three people I found during that time period of around 1790, 1794, right before the 1800s. And I was finding them, some people on the records as farmers. They was put down as colored. Some was put down as mulatto. But they was farmers, which was real interesting. So I had stopped just doing ancestry research and just start confirming some things that I already knew about post-revolution. And when I went back and started reading again and just looking at events, I started to dig more into George Washington's acculturation program or methods of acculturation, which was to force or encourage the American Indians to accept, when they said accept the white, they use the general, like, accept the way of the European or the way of the white man. But when you dig deeper into what that meant that they had to become Christianized. And their methods of farming had changed to the methodology that the Europeans had with the concept of farming. And one thing I found interesting about just the farming methods in America is because a lot of Europeans that came here, they were not successful at farming, even though they try to put it in, when we're in school and they give us all the history, they try to put it as if people was successful. But they were, many were not successful as farming. So when you look at, okay, how can people come and be farmers in a region that they did not know? You find that there were people here that already was masters of agriculture. It's all in the books. When you read, even if you get the book with John Sullivan's Fight Against the Iroquois Nation, which took place in New York, New Jersey, and PA, when they went into the towns, they were amazed at the produce that was produced. Even at one point, and I have it in a book, when they were in New York near Middletown, what is now Middletown, the people wrote in the soldiers wrote in the journals that the strawberries was so huge, they never seen strawberries as large as they ever seen in Middletown. So I found those, you know, those things remarkable. And even when you deal with just the whole history of tobacco, the Europeans did not even know what tobacco was until they came across the ocean. So the question would be, how did they become, they were just merchants of it. When it came to actually growing it, they were not growing it. Even if you go back to Thomas Jefferson's ancestors and the plantation he had, which was in Virginia. When you look at the location, really look at where they say the location of this plantation was, it was in the wilderness. It was not too far from what is now Richmond, Virginia. Even the name of the plantation is a Native American name, which is Tuckahoe, because Tuckahoe was a plant. A medicine herbal plant that was only found in North America. So things, when we look deeper in it, it's more than what was taught. And like you were saying earlier, it's more than what is taught. But we have to learn to try to personalize the stories, because what we learn about history is a generalization. When you start to break it down and go back and trace your ancestry to history, we will find something totally different. And that's how I began on that process. That's how my book was developed into like 290 pages.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying, people, and I heard you mention European, but what are we talking about? We're talking about what people are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the people of color, people who call themselves Afro-American, Black. Majority of us, particularly if you could trace your ancestry to the north, to the, we say, the East Coast. If you dig deeper into your history, because even it's even said in when people do history about just dealing with American Indian or Mary Indian history.
Mm-hmm.
If a person can trace their ancestry before 1860, then they say it's like a 65% chance that you're Native American. If you could trace your ancestry before 1830, then the percentages drop. Now, when you start to go into the 1700s, the percentage of you being American, descended from American Indian, now you're talking about maybe 5%. And the further you go back, the more closer you are of being actually American Indian. But they changed so much things in laws, even in what you say, projection of what the people look like. It's different at each stage. Something took place that convinced the people that you're something else, or other people were Native Americans, which in fact the people are not Native American, or let's say American Indian. Let's put it like that, because I learned after I confirmed it after I wrote the book. It's a big difference between Native American and American Indian. But at the time, I didn't want to use the term American Indian because I didn't want people to confuse it with being talking about Indian history of people who came from India and now that's in United States, in America. So that's another reason why I use Native American methods of obliteration of the Native Americans. But at the time, I couldn't really concrete, when I was writing the book, confirm the difference between American Indian and Native American. It wasn't until recently, with my other writings that I'm doing, that I was able to confirm the difference.
What is that difference?
The difference is that the people that you see nowadays who are more, let's say, European looking, they are the Native Americans. And they have taken, most of them have taken the identity through the, what you say, the laws that took place during the policy of Walter Plecker to become the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Seminole, the Creek, the Muskogee, and other tribes, particularly those tribes, because those tribes are considered the five civilized tribes. And to make it American or more European looking, because this was the idea of William Byrd when he was writing his journals, and he did the border between North Carolina and Virginia. He this is when the intermixing began after, you say, like 1730, because they wanted to bleach. His whole statement was, we should bleach the complexion of the American Indian just as we bleach the complexion of the Moors. This is his exact words.
Mm.
So, because even when you look at that history, after the fall of the Khalifaship in Andalus or Spain, and the Inquisition took place, those who did not leave Spain and went to back across the water into Africa, they eventually became what they call Huguenots or Huguenots. And then they became Christianized, and because most of them that are called the Huguenots, which is found that came to America, most of those are the converted descendants of the Muslims who were in Spain.
Now you're using the word bleach. Are we talking about interracial marriages?
Well, they used the, he used the words bleach because you wanted to change your intermarriage. One is the intermarriage, the lightening of the skin, and the changing the whole methods, changing because most when you look in the docket, when you look at the references of the intermarriages, majority intermarriages, even though there were some, but majority intermarriage was the European men marrying the American women and then teaching those children not the traditions of their mother, but the traditions of the father, and those are the ones that were maneuvered into position to control the American tribes, and these were the ones that was in the position to help the Christian missionaries that came in to Christianize the people.
What were they called? You saying American? The American?
Yeah, they were called. They were the American. They were the. They were called the Indian. They was called the American Indian, and these were the people, the American Indian, and because the reason why they're called Indian because when the people came across, remember, Christopher Columbus was looking for a route to India. So when he came across and first landed in Cuba, and because of the complexion of the people, some records say he didn't even think he was in Cuba. I mean, India. He thought he was in China and Japan, and he forced his people that was with him to say that they in China or Japan, and then other people who came later and came like in what we know of North America. They said the people look like Indians. Either they look like Indians or they look like Ethiopians, the Habeshi. So the Abyssinians, excuse me. And they called them the Indians because if they were of a complexion of European, why would they call them, you know, I mean, they wouldn't call them Indians. So the whole thing, and under William Byrd in 1730, this was his philosophy, and he also mentioned the Anglo-Saxons sort of took up the methods of the French and the Spanish, which was the intermarriages, marrying the people, marrying the women, and having children with them, and having those children become the leaders. Because what the things that the English did, they came in and was just taken, invasion and taken, because we find that after the months of Captain John Smith, when they landed in Jamestown and the supplies were not coming in, they raided Key Coughlin. They just went in, took the land, terrorized the people, massacred, and forced other ones to flee because they knew that this place right here, they have the food, they have the agriculture, and it was at the harvest time, so they just took it. But once they did that, the other ships happened to come in with more supplies, and they just fortified the area.
Go
ahead, Emil.
What's the relationship between the with the Indians? Now, I didn't quite catch the part about American. Who was the American? The American and the Indians are the same people, or are American different people?
American Indians are the same people. But what I was just being more specific because in the Europeans didn't call themselves Americans until after the Revolutionary War. Prior to the Revolutionary War, they called themselves the colonists, the white settlers, and they were, and it wasn't really a political system set up until, after 1730, because like you say Charleston, South Carolina, that was a corporation, Jamestown, the colony, the the Company of Virginia. These was companies. The Massachusetts, the Company of Massachusetts, these was companies with interests. But the political system, as starting to turn from being a company until, let's say city states or a jurisdiction defining the English expansion into North America, didn't come about until they starts, you say like 1730, particularly with Jamestown, Charleston, and New York, and up in Massachusetts and Connecticut, because they were still on the coastal areas. All the cities was on the coastal areas. They were not in the inland, particularly in Virginia, and definitely not North Carolina. They were not in the, where you find like Greensboro, and you find further into Virginia, in the deeper part of Virginia. They were not there, and it wasn't until after 1730 that the population came there, because they did not exist there because of the resistance from the American Indian.
Hmm. Okay, so the American is the original American before the Declaration of Independence, or before the Revolutionary War. The original American were the Indians?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then after they won, the colonists won independence from Great Britain, then they took the name America.
Right. It's the same the trend that took place in Cuba. You had the people that came to colonize, they still called themselves, they know they wasn't from here, they was either from England, or let's say in Cuba, they was from Spain. So, and as the generations were growing up, they wanted to consider themselves American, but the people, and this is in a reference, they was told, you're not American, you're Europeans. And just like in Spain, I mean in Cuba, they were called Creole. What was interesting about the word Creole in Cuba is that Creole was the name for the Spanish born in Cuba. And the same thing in America, they were called colonists. It wasn't, because I guess it was arrogance, it was a conquest when you deal with after the Revolutionary War. It wasn't just what they call liberation. From taxation. It was a victory, because it was certain restrictions in place. Even when the British was here, they tried to lay on the people. Like it was a treaty, we find dealing with Pittsburgh, that prior to the Revolutionary War, it was a treaty in place that no European can go past the Allegheny Mountains and PA. Anything west of the Allegheny Mountains was all American Indian, and the fort that was in Pittsburgh was set there to monitor, to make sure no one encroached into those lands. And then after the Revolutionary War, it happened to become to be the town of the city of Pittsburgh. But it was a lot of brutal things going on. Then on the other hand, they had treaties in place. But after the Revolutionary War, a lot of these treaties was disregarded.
Mm-hmm. Now the American Indian, what happened to the American Indian? Because some statistics I have showed that there was about 65 million American Indians before Columbus landed in North America. So is this,
yeah,
you saying obliteration?
Uh-huh.
Is it relevant to that?
Yes, it's relevant to that, because what I find one about interesting about that number is that, what regions are they talking about? Because when we deal with us, and we deal with the history of the American Indian, and how I'm saying as far as North Carolina and Virginia, particularly North Carolina and Virginia, the English were only in from Atlantic Ocean to the Mississippi until after the 1800, say after 1840. Across the Mississippi, everything across the Mississippi into the Pacific Ocean was either Mexican Empire or the Spanish and French territory. So when you deal with that number of 65 million, who are they counting? Are they counting just what we call like the Northeast region into the islands, into South America, or are they just talking about, because they vague with the number, they vague on where they're talking about, or are they just talking about the Northeast region dealing from South Carolina all the way up into Nova Scotia. So that number, you know, what region they talk, because they like to generalize. When we hear anything dealing with the American Indian and they try to, or even with our history of Afro-Americans and deal with, they like to just generalize and put everything all together, but each event took place in different time periods.
Right. Well, what do you say was the number of people that weren't European that were here when the European came?
I think it may have been more than 65 million.
So you say it's more.
I say it may be more. It may have been more than 65 million. Because I mean, just look at the population of New York City, just in the major cities. To me, I think it. That number, because it really, a lot knows best, because we don't really know, but I know it was when you read the history, this place was populated. It was not empty.
Yes.
It was populated, because they had town, even if you, like I said, if you get the book, which is John Sullivan's, fight against the Iroquois Nation, and you deal with the journals. You look at these towns, when they talk mentioned in the towns, and it wasn't teepees, they had houses with glass windows.
Mm.
You know, it's what these people was killed, was some towns they even preserve just to run the people off. And in New Jersey, some towns, they had people coming in from north, because remember, it was certain ports that the Europeans was coming in. Mainly, they was coming in from the north, from Boston, because it was already established, Jamestown, Charleston, but mainly from the north, New Amsterdam or New York, Boston, and they was migrating down. They was migrating south. It wasn't too much coming across, particularly into North Carolina. The people were migrating down. They came in, came across, and then came down. Once, I guess, they filled out what was going on, and then they migrated down.
Mm-hmm. The relegation, going back to the term here, obliteration, when did that start? Or can we say that... is talking about the mixing of the race or the integration of the sexes, where you would have the native people or Americans become more like the European. What are we looking at when we're looking at the existence of the people who were here before the European came?
How I wrote it, I was dealing with ideology, not so much of physical obliteration, because I found it was the ideology that they used on different methods each step to change the people. And once the ideology was accepted, they no longer became, they were no longer who they were. I'll give you an example. You find that they mention that the American Indian was savages and heathens. So they was inhuman. So once they be accepted the European way of life under Christianity, they could no longer be seen as an American Indian, because to be American Indian was to be heathen and savage. So they had to live within the, or not within, like, deep in, but they had to live near the settlements of the Europeans. Most of the time they were with the missionaries. The missionaries set up some type of town or village for them. And they had to leave off all their ways. They had to change their clothing style. They had to change their hairstyle. They had, most of them spoke English. They was accepting the language because they wanted to do trade. So they had to give up everything that made them a Native American, or American Indian, excuse me, because that was considered heathen and savage. And once they adopted, and always say converted into the European ways, many of them start being identified as the free people of color, and this is where they started to be, appear in records.
So this obliteration is talking about, is it, are you just talking about abandonment of culture, or what? They left their culture and took up the European culture.
Right. Well, so, I mean, when you, yeah, go ahead.
So you are you? I'm just trying to get some clarification on the term obliteration. It can mean a couple of things, and I'm not to understand that it means that for a great deal of them, it was that they gave up all their culture was, well, you didn't use the word taken, but their culture, they was changed from. The savage or whatever the European from at that time to become more like the European, which meant they had to give up their language and way that they live and all that. So would you call, or are you saying that that's that obliteration is really talking about an abandonment of culture?
I mean, you could use that word abandonment, but the reason why I chose obliteration is because we have to look at the conditions as well. Because it's an encroachment in land. Their way of life is being infringed upon. And this is what's being offered. For peace, this is what's being offered. Because, and that, it took place in steps. Because one of the things they did was that when they went to an area and they first sought out to remove the authority, like you say in Virginia, how what they did to the Powhatans and the other tribes, the first thing they did was to go after an authority. Once you disrupt the authority and there's no leadership, now the people are in a vulnerable position, and you declaring their land, or the Europeans declaring the land that once was somebody's home or township, European territory, and they're fleeing, because at the same time you had tribes against tribes. It was no unified, they're after all of us. No, you still had this situation because you're dealing with jurisdictions. And to me, I saw it when I was looking at the information, I saw it more like this during the time of the city-state tribes post-Roman Empire. You still had that concept here in America. You had basically tribal territories considering themselves empires. So you still had that going on along in the, let's say from the east, let's say from the west side, on the west part, you had another tribe. So it's hard for one tribe to flee into that tribe when, you know, they're not really on good terms and they have treaties. Then at the same time, you have the Europeans coming in from the east into from the ocean. So now you're talking about survival and what's left once your area is being cornered off. Many of them, this is what they chose. So it wasn't until, like they say, that one first generation that accepted that way, they didn't consider themselves truly Christians or abandoning their culture. It took a generation or two. Because remember, the missionaries are they're not really teaching the adults. They focusing on the children. And they're educating the children. So now you have a different mentality growing, particularly when the children do not know the language of their ancestry. They're adopting and conforming to the English mentality.
So what are the people, the Americans, the original Americans, is there any effort being made to reestablish the original American people in terms of in today's world?
From what I'm saying, no. And the reason why is because no one is looking at their ancestry and going deep in. People are fixated on the DNA and not really looking back, okay, who was your great-great-grandfather or grandmother? And, everybody's focused on the DNA, and there's a deception with the DNA because the DNA is just like what Walter Plecker did in the early 1920s. When he said, okay, all these people who say they have American Indian ancestry are lying. They're nothing but Negroes. And he deemed that. And the state of Virginia went with it and went by surname, a whole list of surnames, and said, okay, you're no longer being accepted as American Indian. You're Negroes. And then he went on a campaign to different states to show them how he did it, and they implemented the same process because the trick that they did was with the what you call the American census, the Indian census, because they went around and just had Indian census, but they knew that the Indian census only dealing with those who at the time that still maintained some allegiance or some affiliation to the tribal area or what was left of it prior to 1830. And particularly when you deal with Virginia, New York, New Jersey, a lot of the American Indians had converted into the European way of life.
That's not just adopting Christianity, but the European way of life, including Christianity.
Right, exactly, right. So because they was living in the towns, in order to live in those particular, let's say, societies, you couldn't be an Indian. You had to accept the European way of life. You had to adopt to it. Because even this is the famous one. Like Harrison, New Jersey, most of us from New Jersey. Harrison, New Jersey was named after President Harris. Harrison.
Right.
Well, it was his grandfather who was the governor or the governor? The governor in the Indiana Territory. And he was confronting with the American Indians there because at this time, this right before the 1812 war, the Indians start to realize, okay, yo, they taking too much, and we like being we are being totally wiped out. We gotta wake up. But he made statements that go ahead.
Can we just open the floor for any questions or comments that you might have?
Sure.
Point we see quite a bit of people here. So, but any of you that have any comments or questions about what Brother Malik, our author, Brother Malik H. Majid, has been talking with us about Rock the Mic, that his new book, Method of Native American Liberation. If you have any questions or any comments relevant to that, just push the one on your phone, and you can come into the queue and ask your questions or make your statement. Okay, let's see quite a number of people, but I don't see anyone coming into the queue. So with that, let me take a quick break. For those who came on after, that's the number of maybe four. Let's make this announcement quick.
Mark your calendars for the 2023 Muslim Journals, A Time to Be Grateful, coming to Newark, New Jersey, December 7th through the 10th. A Time to Be Grateful is MJ's annual fundraiser to raise awareness about the publication and increase subscriptions, advertisements, and distributors. ATTBG features a weekend of events that promote gratitude, human excellence, cultural expression, and spiritual development, including Culture Night, which showcases Muslim singers, musicians, and spoken word artists, a modest yet ultra-stylish family fashion show luncheon, an awards banquet, business breakfast, marketplace with Muslim vendors, and more. Don't wait. Get your tickets today. Visit www.masjidalhaq.com or call 862-250-5451. I hope to see you there.
Thank you very much. Brother Malik, why don't you continue with that? It was very interesting. In a particular point, but I'm really interested in this is the collaborative effect seems as though, given, I guess, about social force or something of that nature between the European, one might say domination. You haven't used that term, but given the Europeans coming into America, developing part of the land for themselves, and then having the people who were here, the Americans who were here, take on customs and ideas of the European and abandon that or leave that their own customs behind. Can we see any evidence at all of the way the people, so those who are left, how they feel about what has happened over the years, and what direction are they taking today? Those who are here, how do they feel, and about all of this?
You kind of was choppy. I heard like bits and pieces. I just heard something about far as how do people feel today?
Mm-hmm. All right. Basically, I was just asking you to get us to the point as to how the people are feeling today, based on all you have told us in a different aspect of what happened. How do they feel today? Did you get any kind of census from that research to give you that idea?
No, I didn't get any. I didn't do any research on that, but I know from doing events and just talking to people in general, how it's a lot of confusion, because, and it's a frustration. And to me, it's a lot of things that is done, and you said it earlier, to entice emotions, because. Let's take the concept of critical race theory. If we just base it on just the statement, to really analyze race. Why is it such an opposition to it? Because if you analyze race and you really look at it and dig deep into race history, racial history in America, you'll find out that it was made up. Because prior to the Europeans coming to America, there was no such thing as race. There was no white race. There was no black race. There was no yellow race. That concept didn't come into existence until people who were sincerely observing the American Indians in North America and in South America. And they were saying, because they were struck that how did these people come here? Because remember, everything is linked. Europe is connected to Asia, and Asia is connected to Africa. Then you have this mass land separated by the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. So the people who really wanted to know, they said, where did these people come from? Because we could say, okay, in what we call the old world, people came from Adam. From Adam, from his children, on down, and we could trace it. But where did these people come from? So now, as they was analyzing, and they were seeing the behaviors and going back and digging deep into what they believe, they was coming up with the conclusion that these people is the lost tribe of Israel. Once that start coming out, all of a sudden, boom, the race theory came into being. The black race, the white race, and then the red race didn't really come into existence, if you look at it, until after 1812. Because the red race actually supposed to justify the true mulatto. Because, see, we think that people who are yellow-boned and all that, they're the mulattoes. They're not the mulattoes. The mulattoes are the Europeans who was born from the European father, an American Indian. Those are the mulattoes. But instead of calling them the mulattoes, they called them the red race. And this changed everything. So now we look at really critical thinking, critical race theory, and we dig deep into everything, we start to see this. But what's to stop it? You have people who migrated here in the 1900s who's talking all this division and all this evil talk. Just why? To divide and cause emotions. But as Muslims, what did the Prophet ﷺ give advice to the man when he asked for advice? He said, do not get angry. He said it three times. And if we take this concept, when we see these events like these ideological or these mentality confrontations, not to get angry and get emotional and really look at it, we can start to see something's not right. And really, it goes back to what? Knowing your ancestry. Because the Prophet ﷺ had told us, the wealthy one is one who knows his ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we need to look at.
Well, I want to take you, not take you back, but I just want a little clarification for myself in terms of the difference in terms of the use of the words. One, you use the word color when you interchange it with the word race. Are you giving color a place of origin as if a race usually have a place of origin? You can tell where race comes from, the place, the land, whatever they come from, and that dictates a little bit about their culture. When you say color, when you say black, yellow, red, those colors, are you saying in your language information you give us, they're synonymous to race? Do they have a place of origin? This concept, in your view, do they have a place of origin in terms where they come from on the planet. Are you hearing me clearly? I thought my mic might have been going out a little bit.
No, I got you. I got you on that point.
Mm-hmm.
When you deal with the races, what I'm saying from my research, the races was made up here in America. Because prior to the concept of the races, like I'm saying, when we hear race in America, originally, in North America, let me specify, in North America, there were only three, they say it's three races, the white race, the black race, and the red race. But these are all made up. Because prior to the concept of race, it was ethnicities. When we go back into Europe, it was the Gauls versus the Romans. It was the Romans versus the Greeks. The Greeks versus the Persians. The Persians against the Turkmen going further west. Even if I don't know if people know this because I have noticed this. If you talk to a person that comes from Africa, and if you could really identify them because it's not based upon color, it's based upon features. If you know what particular people look like, and when you converse with them, they always tell you they're from Africa. But if you really talk to them, no one says they're from Africa. That it's specific. You ask them to be more specific. Okay, where are you from? Even this is be a learning process too, so you can get more familiar. But everyone, no one in Africa says they're from Africa. They either a tribal situation or a country situation. This is their locality. No one ever says they're from Africa. It's only when people come here that they try to conform into the ideology. Because they think people don't know that everybody's ignorant of the world other than America. And they're trying to conform to the concept of American race. Because even if we look at what's going on, let's say, in France, right? If we look at what's going on in France and Germany, when they're talking, their race, what they call in racial conflict is totally different than what's happening in America or even in England. Because to me, I find it kind of weird that people who was not forced to go to England, they volunteered to go to England. They volunteered to go to France. This is before like the Syria situation and everything and the migration after the fall of Libya with Gaddafi. I'm talking about, you say, early the 1990s and stuff. But the people volunteered to go to those lands. And then when they're confronted with the confrontation of people preserving their culture, they want to say they want their rights. When really, why don't you just go back to where you come? If it's that bad there for you and you're trying to say it's like being in America, you have a choice to go back to where you came from. Whereas here, we don't have a choice. And the problem is we don't have a choice is because most of us, that situation, even in slavery, most of us did not come across the ocean.
Interesting. Now, we're running down from time to, now I want to just make an announcement once again. Those of you who are listening to the broadcast, we have a broadcast to follow this broadcast about relationships and marriage and families that'll be coming on right after this broadcast. And if you have any questions, I see some hands coming up. If you have any questions, ask a question because we don't have much time. I do would like for Brother Malik to give us his closing thoughts, and I also would like for him to tell us what his objective. What is he hoping that the book would do? You can think about that while we take this question, Brother Malik. Okay, we have a question from area code 708.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers. This is Sister Layla. My question is, where can we get your book, Brother Malik? And my comment is, this conversation is very, very interesting and informing and leaves me with countless questions. And so I hope that you come back on another time and continue this conversation. Thank you both.
MashaAllah. You could get the book at Doris, D-O-R-R-A-N-C-E, Publishing Bookstore. And it's under Rock the Mic, Malik H. Majid. And hopefully, after you purchase the book and read it, hopefully many of those questions will already be answered in the book, inshallah.
Inshallah. Thank you again. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Okay, Brother Malik, now, I don't see any other questions. Let me make sure we have, okay. Brother Malik, I want you to just give me an idea, just to listen, an idea of what is your objective in terms of your hope for the book, what it's going to do in terms of, you know, the masses. What is your objective here?
My objective is to show the similarities of the past to actually what's going on within our communities today. And to make people really look at their ancestry. Because when we look at issues that's really facing what's going on, if we really look at our ancestry and look at and really dig deep into history and understand the history, we can squash a lot of this ideological confrontations that's going on. It's because we don't know and we don't want to know. And we're accepting, like you said earlier, after segregation, we're accepting a way of thinking we're somebody that we're not. You know, as you say, how can I put this? As American, let's put it like this. American as a citizen of the United States is always structured to put us in a box. But what is interesting is that for people who have traveled overseas or outside of the United States, if you're not in that box and you travel outside to other societies, they will never be convinced that you're American because of what they, you know, based upon United States. They will never believe that you're who you're saying you are because you don't fit in those structures of what's being projected outside of the United States. But until we really understand who we are and keep moving on, it's not to get angry, just keep moving on, we can squash a lot of the stuff, foolishness that's going on in the world today. I give you an example. They keep talking about drugs. How long they have been talking about drugs? They've been talking about drugs since I was born. I could say after the 1960s. But what if we was to really understand that in order for them to get the land, they introduced something to people in this land that they never did, and that was alcohol. And it was documented that these people never drank alcohol.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So this is my objective.
Just to
make people understand what their ancestry is to this land.
Mm-hmm. Give us the information again.
As far as for the book or
your information, who you are, what, how they can get in touch with you, and get the book.
The book?
Are you
can
pop anywhere?
No, I'm just a regular guy. I just go office a lot, and that's it. I don't teach. I'm not a professor. I'm not a teacher on that level.
Okay.
I'm just a regular person studying the Quran and practicing Islam.
Okay. Now, that's good, because you're doing a lot of research which proves the fact that we all have the ability to research and write books and get information to help one another, to begin to see the importance of communication and collaboration with one another. Now, you said that the address of the getting the book is where?
Is Doris, D as in David, O, R R, A, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, E. Dorrance Publications Bookstore. It's on it's on the web, and you go to their bookstore, you do the search, you put right there in the search bar Rock the Mic. The Rock, R O C, not R O C K. Rock the Mic, and it'll pop up, and you can get the book there. Or if you're in the North area, I could give you my business number, and you could contact me on this number, and I could just meet up with you to sell your book. The number is 732-351-4742. 732-351-4742. Or if anybody who didn't catch the website, you could just text me at that number, and I could send you the link if you're outside of the Middlesex, Essex County, Union Area.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Brother Malik, for coming on and giving us your insight on the situation here in America and the history of the people who've seen, a lot of that history has been misplaced or burned or whatever they did with it. But we thank you for coming here and giving us this information. With that, I want to remind you that this program that follows this program is all about courtship and marriage. That follows this program. Stay tuned after that. I wanted you to hear the program that's coming up.
Mark your calendars for the 2023 Muslim Journals, A Time to Be Grateful, coming to North New Jersey, December 7th through the 10th. A Time to Be Grateful is MJ's annual fundraiser to raise awareness about the publication and increase subscriptions, advertisements, and distributors. ATTBG features a weekend of events that promote gratitude, human excellence, cultural expression, and spiritual development, including Culture Night, which showcases Muslim singers, musicians, and spoken word artists, a modest yet ultra-stylish family fashion show luncheon, an awards banquet, business breakfast, marketplace with Muslim vendors, and more. Don't wait. Get your tickets today. Visit www.masjidalhaq.com or call 862-250-5451. Hope to see you there.
Thank you very much for that announcement. And I want to just remind you again that we're here every Tuesday evening between 5 and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the name of this program that you are listening to now is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. and I'm your host, Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African-American griot. And I'm hosting this program because we are looking to bring as much enlightenment as we possibly can to the African-American people by all aspects that affect us, all aspects that affect us, and how we can best fare in this day and time with the situations that are going on in the world and with the situation that's going on in our families and in those close to us. We know that it's not easy to concentrate on the bigger picture when we have the small picture, little picture at our home, in our homes, that things are going on with our children and grandchildren. We find it sometimes a little difficult to. In our case, the case of the African American people, is imperative. We begin to train our thinking, train our way of thought, and can train and train our communication between one another so we can develop this concept of mental freedom. There are many, many ways that we can start doing that, because the avenue of controlling the mind of the African American people is clearer than most people think it is, and is it can be changed, but it has to be a conscious effort. It cannot be changed by simply saying, oh, that's just African-American history or African-American culture. Oh, that's going to be different. All we have to do is become smarter. All we have to do is get more education. All we have to do is make more money. All of those answers are not the answers that will free the mind of the African-American people, simply because our minds have been put into a training that was originated long before America came into existence, a training of how to manipulate the masses of people to adhere to those who are leading or those who are in charge, how to manipulate the masses of people simply by giving them different signals and different signs, and most of all, educating them to accept the philosophies and concepts that will cause them to be servants to the leaders and to those who are in charge of the society, the country, the culture, or the tribe, or whatever they are dominating. This is not a new phenomenon. This is old. It goes all the way back to the beginning of you would call the beginning of even the tribes. It goes all the way back to those. Now, those kinds and ideas of control have taken many different looks now. We're in a high-speed technological society. Things are hitting the mind from a subliminal position. Things are hitting the mind from an obvious position, covert, all different directions. Sometimes we think what is shown on the screen or on the teleprompter is good for us, when actually it's good for those who produce it. So with that, we want to just remind you to come back every Tuesday. It's 5 to 7. We'll be here on inheriting the power of mental freedom. And we're going to give you information that you become the controller of your thoughts, that you become in the leadership of your own idea, and trust your own logic to follow the logic to its logical conclusion. So I thank you all very much for tuning in to us this week. And we hope to be back, and you can get some of my information from my website. You can go to my website. It's called The Bilali. It's called Building New Africa. Building New Africa, USA.com. You put the forward slash in behind the .com. That's Building New Africa, /BuildingNewAfricaUSA.com/. You can get, we have blogs there. You can get the conversations that we have here, and we can get other conversations that I have in other aspects. And be sure to check it out. And be sure to come back. Bring a friend next time. Bring more people. Let all of us begin to grow in this understanding and the power of mental freedom. Thank you very much, and may Allah bless you all as I greet you in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Mark your calendars for the 2023 Muslim Journals, A Time to Be Grateful, coming to North New Jersey, December 7th through the 10th. A Time to Be Grateful is MJ's annual fundraiser to raise awareness about the publication and increase subscriptions, advertisements, and distributors. ATTBG features a weekend of events that promote gratitude, human excellence, cultural expression, and spiritual development, including Culture Night, which showcases Muslim singers, musicians, and spoken word artists, a modest yet ultra-stylish family fashion show luncheon, an awards banquet, business breakfast, marketplace with Muslim vendors, and more. Don't wait. Get your tickets today. Visit www.masjidalhaq.com or call 862-250-5451. Hope to see you there.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Assalamu alaikum, dear believers. Welcome.